We're looking for you. The show's on.
When a parent lashes out at the other parent in front of a child, or simply says hurtful things about the other parent in front of a child, they are also attacking that child's sense of self-worth and confidence. This is an act of alienation and is harmful to children and can cause a lifetime of issues for the child. Issues as serious as anxiety, depression, substance abuse, and thoughts of or actual suicide. Help spread the word. Visit www.paawareness.org.
Wow. Hi, this is Jill Ajeezy. Welcome to Family Matters. I'm here with my co-host, Judge Michelle Lawrence, and she is talking to Jackie Birnbaum on the other line, and she'll be with us shortly. Of course, Jackie is an attorney in Chicago. She's our guest tonight, having a little trouble connecting, but we will get her in just a second. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. I know you always ask me what's going on.
You say you're good, but I know, and I think we should tell our listening audience that you've got a little, you're a little verklempt tonight. You've got a little cough, and you've had
I'm sick. I'm sick, but I'm still good.
Yeah, I know you're great. You're always great. You're
not like that. I just mean fundamentally things are well.
Oh, your head's working fine. It's just the cough, and so if you have to get off for a second and cough, we're good with that because we know that you'll come right back and join us. How's everything going in
Theoretically,
Chicago?
I'll come right back. I mean, you never know.
In spirit, you'll always be here, but you'll come right back. I think Jackie is finding us now, and I'm going to pick her up. Welcome, Jackie Birnbaum. How are you? Jackie Birnbaum, are you there?
This is not Jackie Birnbaum.
Oh, hold on just one second. Jackie Birnbaum, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
hi, Jackie.
Great.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? I'm happy to help.
Well,
good.
Glad to have you here. Michelle's with us, and we were just talking a little bit about Michelle's cough, so if she has to leave us, she will and come right back. But I wanted to talk to Michelle for just a second to find out anything new happening in Illinois and family court, Michelle, that you can share with our listening audience.
There's something, and it's a little bit unusual.
Let's hear it.
We have four different mental health professionals who, for people who don't have any money, are doing free evaluations through our court system.
Wow.
Meaning that the students are doing a lot of the grunt work under the supervision of some of the best people in the city. So we have the Family Institute, the Institute of Psychoanalysis, Argosy Loyola Institute, and Erickson Institute for any children up to the age of 8. Now, what is this? Why am I so excited about this? This is sort of a pet project because families who otherwise could never afford therapy, never afford, you know, mental health experts, mm-hmm. are going to have opportunities to have some of the best people say, here's something wrong with your parenting, you need anger management, here's what would be a good plan for your family. So we're going to be able to drop down and otherwise people who have no money to start helping them become better parents. So
wow.
Politically that's huge on every level.
Well, I think that that's politically huge, too, but I think that what's also happened is that the sensibility in the division is changing. It's evolved over time. And I think that what's happened is that people are beginning to understand the cost in every way of trying to template solutions without understanding the subjective realities of the kids and with what they have to deal. And I had an interesting thing that I wanted to bring up because I know that a topic of great interest to you is the parental alienation, and I want to make I think it would be important to draw a similarity or to note a similarity between the campaigning that's going on in such a toxic way on a macro scale. I think that this is very much what is akin to happening, you know, with families, is that the sides are so polarized and so opposite, and they're so interested in demonizing the other, and they're campaigning for the attention and the affection of their children. And the kids are over, what happens with the kids is very much what's happening with the voters in the country, is that all that comes out is fear and and paralysis. And how do you make a choice when the only choices are between people that are insisting on destroying the other and can't see one good thing? So I think that you can see how destructive it is in a macro sense, and I think that it's equally as destructive on a micro sense. And I think
well put.
More and more.
But we'd like to introduce you. Missy, we would like to introduce you.
We would. Jackie.
Yes, we would.
An attorney in Chicago, a family law practice for 21 years, member of the Family Law Section Council for the Illinois Bar Association, 9 years American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. She has been named Super Lawyer every year since 2006. She is one of the top 10 women leading lawyers, and she's testified on family law on several different occasions in our state capital, Springfield, Illinois. So you have quite a bit of accomplishment under your belt. I'm sure there's millions of other things. Do you want to add to that, Jackie?
Well, the only big deal is that I didn't go to law school until I was 38. And I was, so I'm, this is what 60 looks like. But
well, that's
Jackie,
not the
I
only big deal.
You,
I'm not done, Miss Birnbaum.
I got to
say something more about you because we have certain consistent listeners. And there's a lot of people who actually listen to this show. And I want to say something to really pay attention to this show. Because, yes, Jackie's a lawyer. Yes, she has all those accolades. And, yes, she's a phenomenal lawyer. But she is an Olympic world-class child rep, child attorney in ways that are so unique and successful and effective. And she has a lot of controversial opinions. I think you're going to hear some of them. But if you want to know the magic, the secret, what's really behind the scenes with this phenomena called child rep, really pay attention to this show. And in the second half, she's going to tell us a little bit about her opinion about parent coordinators, which is a big deal for people who are in the situations that we're talking about, visitation interference and parental alienation. So I just needed to add that on. In our court system in Cook County, when we have really tough cases and the judges are beside themselves, don't know what to do, she's probably on the first line of defense that we all call. I'm not trying to embarrass you, Jackie, but that's just the truth.
The deal is that so often what's missing is just old fashioned granny wisdom, because the idea that every case that I have with the kids, I start from the single major premise that these are the only two parents they're ever going to have. That's it. That's what they have. And so it behooves all of us to see what it is that we can find that isn't toxic. You know, my grandmother used to say there's always a negative and there's always a positive. It's a choice where to focus. And there is none of us without issues. Everyone has issues, because the only thing that everyone has in common is that everybody used to be a kid. So everybody understands what the world is like from people's knees. Everybody understands what it's like to feel powerless and alone. That's the nature of childhood. And everyone is out to figure out how to feel better. Well, one of the ways that has become, in vogue, and I think that it's really, I want to just reiterate that I think it's cast in the political system as well, is to figure out how to make it a zero-sum game, that you can't be okay, that you can't be okay and I can be okay too. And
well,
what
Jackie, I like it. I like it that you say that, because as Michelle and I say so many times, common sense has left every level of this system. And when you get back to the nuts and bolts of what's happening, a child has two parents, and they should have access to both of them, and barring any sexual abuse or physical abuse, but it's just common sense, granny wisdom has to come into this and get to these people before they enter into this huge adversarial tornado that creates visitation interference and parental alienation.
Bill, you are so right, because what happens is the more people get nuts with this and they step over lines and you're dealing with the most important thing in your life is your children and your future. And then what happens is that, I'm telling you, there's no holds barred because you're thinking with the part of your brain that's primal. And you're into survival mode, and that's you can't see that there's anything else that's possible. And the tremendous, the new discoveries in brain plasticity now are showing that when people are in survival mode, they can't think beyond their fingers. And so the problem, I think, humble opinion, is by the time you cast people into a court system, everyone's is on DEFCON watch. You mm-hmm. have the possibility of, and you're paying a fortune for the privilege, by the way, to have your life judged and evaluated by strangers who don't know who you are. Now, how could anybody not be terrified in that circumstance? You have to be terrified. You wouldn't. We're at the top of the food chain because all of our fear mechanisms are in very fine working order. So the idea to calm people down and to get them not so scared is the reason that I get the results I get. It's because, you know what? Okay. So it looks like it's horrible. No question. It's terribly painful. No question. But in the meantime, if you can get the pot of boiling water down to, like, lukewarm, then if it splashes all over the floor, you need a roll of Bounty towels and you're in business. But what happens is that everybody's playing for stakes that are incalculably high. And they end up campaigning for their children, and their children are stuck like, you know, befuddled voters listening to nothing but violence. How could that be? And which one is right? And how could I? But I love them both. Am I bad? It's really
I can
really
you know, Jackie, I can remember thinking when the child rep was appointed in my situation, and I was a custodial parent, and I'm an alienated mother of four children. I don't know if you knew that or not, but when a custody or a child rep was appointed in my case, I felt relief. I thought, and I knew her, and I thought, this is where common sense is going to step in and take over in my case. My ex-husband, who was a trial attorney, was manipulating the system, and I understood that. I knew that that was happening. But I thought, this is going to be my saving grace. This woman I know she has wisdom. I know she understands that I love my children desperately, and I know that this is going to work for me. Well, what ended up happening was, I split a bill, my half, $47,000, and I look at the bills, and she's taking time to meet with my ex-husband, and one of the entries I specifically remember on the billing statement was, meet with him to try to keep me out of public venues where my children were participating in sporting events. And I called her,
God.
And I said, I'm not going to pay your bill because you're supposed to be representing the best interests of my children, not what my ex-husband is wanting to do. And as it progressed, I saw her becoming just another pawn in the game of alienation, and then was ordered by a judge to pay the $47,000 anyway, no matter what I had to do to get the money. So I think people who have come this far in the alienation and visitation interference process, who have child reps and child attorneys appointed, have become very I guess jaded in thinking that there is any hope for any positive outcome. So how do you respond to that?
Well, yeah. This is a big deal. This is a big deal, and I will explain to you exactly. Believe me, I understand what those complaints are, and I understand. Now I'm on the I sit for and have for many years on the Family Law Section Council for the Illinois Bar Association,
mm-hmm.
and we're trying to address, and I don't want to be, you know, over. I don't think I'm letting any cats out of the bag. I mean, this is what we're trying to do, is we're trying to have legislation that will address this, not to try to circumscribe or direct people how they represent kids, but to make sure that it's a little more transparent. And one of the things that we've come up with is after having listened at length to people who have had experiences not unlike your own, and we made ourselves. I went specifically with the chair of the section council last year, and we went to go meet with these people in the course of dealing with legislation that had been proposed. And I wanted to make sure that they were heard, because there's always more than a kernel to listen to, no matter how angry someone is. And we listened and we listened, and we want to make sure, we're trying to make sure that at least the hourly rate is disclosed at the and set at the time of the appointment, that the expectations of a child rep or a guardian ad litem or an attorney for the minor child are clear. So we're trying to set at least the parameters out so that people aren't buffeted. But it, Jill, in terms of what happened to you, it's an art, not a science, and it's a fledgling type of practice. And I understand that there's a lot of discretion involved, and I understand that because, again, the stakes are so high, that it's a reasonable thing that people are going to be disappointed. I can't fix everything, you know.
Right.
What I can do is to try to make sure that people have their voices heard. That's what a child rep is supposed to do. It's a non-judgmental element in the practice and a non-judgmental way to make sure that people have their stories heard, not filtered through lawyers, not filtered through the pleadings, because the pleadings, Jill and Michelle, are designed to have the same reaction IPCAC has. You look at those captions and you want to throw up. It's like having an assault to the solar plexus. So there, and no one feels that they've been heard. The kids don't feel they've been heard, and the parents don't feel that they've been heard. This is why it's different than a psychological evaluation or anything, and I think it's a tremendous opportunity for people to make sure at least they get their stories out. Now, I can't tell you that everything's perfect. I'm not a moron, you know. I mean, I understand that there's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. But in terms of relying on people who can hear and come up with ways to navigate the system, I think is better than trying to go for rules that aren't going to work, because people aren't robots. We're not toasters. We don't come with ownership manuals. It seems to me that the best I can do, and, you know, I do a lot of seminars and I do a lot of stuff, is to try to get people to understand that because things aren't perfect, it doesn't mean they're horrible. People are doing the best they can to navigate impossibly difficult situations, kids and parents.
Well, so you're referring a lot to the general cases, and I know that you've had some cases that have to do with more you know, characterological disorders. That's often, not always, but often lead to the alienation cases.
Well, when
using that logic, how do you get through? Have you ever, and I kind of know the answer to this, have you ever gotten through to an alienator?
Well,
if anyone could, it might be you.
Pardon me?
If anyone could, I think it would be you.
Well, it doesn't happen often, but I'll tell you that I think I have. And I'm going to change the genders, but I'm going to tell you something that happened that's interesting, because what happens oftentimes I see with really horrific alienation cases. I had one, and I can tell you this because it was long enough ago that the resolution made itself clear. It was the worst alienation case I've ever seen in terms of mom using an older daughter not of that union to attempt to poison in the most pernicious ways this little girl against her father. And we went through a number of therapists. We went through all different kinds of pride. It was really horrible, horrible. What ended up happening is that, and you can switch genders on this, because the kid needed the alienating parent, and she couldn't thwart her because she needed her too much. After the case was over and people had retired to their separate quarters, and after I had at least made sure that the little girl knew that her dad had tried valiantly through the system over a period of many years to try to reach her, and that when she was ready, there was an enormous amount of material that she could call on to verify what I had said, that it was never that she had been abandoned. It was that the issues between the parents could not be resolved. Okay. After all the dust died down, this girl, and she was a young teenager, found herself in a Thelma and Louise situation in a motel in one of the southern states with a guy, and she had been compromised. And when she called her mother, now that the spotlight was off, the alienating mother, she said, well, you know what, you made your bed, you lie in it. And she called her dad, who was down there in a flash. And the reunion and the reunification between the alienated parent and the child, once the child was free to see things as they actually were, was remarkable. And it was a life-changing situation for everyone. So what happens a lot of times on the alienating parent is that it's a short-lived win. It's a Pyrrhic victory, because if a kid is too afraid to thwart the parent in control for whatever reason, when that power subsides, if the other parent can hold on and be patient enough, life is long. Life is long. And oftentimes what happens is that there's a reunification that's really breathtaking in its intensity. So, you know, it's hard to say that to someone who feels that they've been abused by the system and that they're being twisted or alienated from their kids because of a parent who's out of control. And I understand that. But you can only do what you can do. And if a kid, for whatever reason, is bonded or dependent on a parent that's trying to rub the other person out because they either don't want the competition or they can't deal with their feelings, that sometimes all you can do for the kid, instead of cutting the kid in half, is to somehow wait and make sure that the interest is that the interest is steady and clear, because your kids are your kids forever.
What's your thoughts about the alienated parent, you know, writing letters, keeping contact, sending presents, in the extreme cases where the relationship's really broken down?
Well, from my experience on this, is to have an independent record, you know, is that to have somebody, whether it's a grandparent or a friend or whatever, or even a court, where you have actual records of the time and the interest and the consistency of the time and the interest, so that when a kid is ready to hear this, without feeling his or her life is threatened, then they can hear it. And, you know, again, kids grow. Every kid who's, you know, 5 is, God willing, going to be 35. And it's a different story when you have someone who's older.
Jackie, let me ask you something. Nobody can get through to people as I've seen you get through to people. What happens when you try and go eye to eye with an alienator and you tell them about the destruction? What happens with you?
I don't tell them about the destruction. You know, what I see with an alienating parent is someone who's trying to rub out the competition because they don't feel they can compete. You know, I feel that in many cases, this insistence on trying to get rid of somebody is really a testament to the power that person has. You know, the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. And the lack of any kind of indifference with an alienating spouse is what they're doing, is that they're making, you know, they're creating, it seems to me, that it's mistaken. They must think it's terribly powerful to go on these campaigns to eliminate them. I mean,
there's our little Nietzsche. That's me. It's interesting to me, Jackie, how you couch it from your perspective. You know, looking at it from from the world that I'm in, from an alienated parent's perspective,
from or what we call the target parent, and from the many hundreds of thousands of parents and grandparents and aunts, uncles, and cousins that I deal with on a continuous basis daily. You know, it's still, to me, I think that there's so much more that we could offer to you to have insight into this world of alienation, because I think, you know, you've got all the right tools, but I think if you could get into the head of a target parent and then look at these alienators and use some of the new protocols that are being used to deal with alienators and the target parent and child that is the true victim, then I think that goes a long way, education. And if we can get child reps and child attorneys to see all of the facets of this and how deep it goes and the horrible effects that it will have on the child, long-lasting effects into adulthood.
Jill, I'm not arguing with you. Jill, I'm not minimizing any part of what you're saying. And I'm very, very interested, as are all of us, in finding out more, the more we can, about toxic situations in general and alienation in specific. But, my focus on this is getting people, to the extent I'm able to get things neutralized and diffused enough to get them out of the court system. Because the court system, Jill, is that, you know, that the play doesn't go on unless there's dates at the palace. And the court system itself is draining emotionally. It's draining financially. It gives people who want to use the system a chance to be able to be on stage.
Yes.
And what I try to do, but I can't do every case. But what it seems to try, I think that what I try to do is to diffuse. I can't correct all this stuff. I don't have that kind. You know, I resigned as chairman of the world many years ago. No one was interested. So I have to be able to set my sights in a reasonable way, and I can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Right. Yeah, right.
So
we have a call. Jackie, I'd like to take from the 630 area code. Welcome. Do you have a question for Jackie? 630 area code. Are you there? Apparently, there is no one there, but I have a call in the chat room that they would like to ask you, what are the opportunities to take an evaluator to task who totally missed the shared delusional disorder in my children and the personality disorder in the alienating parent? Could they reevaluate and turn the case around to reverse custody?
Well, here's the deal. And I think actually the judge is even in a better position to discuss this. One of the bills that I testified in connection with was years ago in getting a 604.5. In Illinois, a 604.5 is an evaluator that can be retained by a party.
Right.
There's a 604 that can be appointed by the court. If a 604 comes up with something that's, you know, way off base, and sometimes that happens, then the alternative is to get a 604.5. But I know that there are many judges, and this is the part I would ask the Judge Lawrence to speak to, is that the court is not under any obligation to rely upon or to accept a 604 analysis. So you can have a lawyer or whatever or however it's presented, or the judge himself or herself can think that this is so far off the mark that he or she doesn't pay attention.
Not only has it happened, but a lot of times I start questioning the evaluator because I hear some very surprising things. And as you know, guys, and everybody who's listening, so much of personal perspective and prejudice comes to the party, even in an evaluation, even though there's training not to be. So the segue to that is child reps a lot of personal, so much do so many child reps bring their own personal perspective. And I'm wondering what you can tell us about how to try and make sure that your child rep stays neutral, and what's the difference between guardian and child rep first, so that not everybody knows. And which is better for a parental alienation case?
Well, here's the deal. a guardian is...
Sorry.
And this is what we're trying to codify as a matter of statute. I know that the case law is reasonably clear on this. A guardian ad litem is supposed to bring... supposed to represent the child's best interest according to the guardian ad litem. And there's no duty of confidentiality. A guardian ad litem can be deposed. A guardian ad litem can testify. A guardian ad litem is the eyes and ears of the court. and that's what a guardian does. An attorney for the minor child, usually appointed when you have teenagers, all the confidentiality, all the duties of an attorney are that is what an attorney for the minor child does. Then there's a hybrid, and that's the child representative. And we're trying to, again, to make this clear as to what the exact parameters are. But a child rep cannot testify, but a child rep, not only can't the child rep testify, that means the child rep can't do a written report, because if a written report at trial becomes part of the court record, you can't, the child rep can't hide behind it and say you can't, I can't be questioned, but I can submit a report that is supposed to come in without discussion. So child reps can only make, what we're supposed to do, and I'm sorry for, this is really, it's a point of great concern to me. The child reps are supposed to do what they can before a trial starts to settle a case. Once a trial begins, that's it. Then a child rep can only argue from the evidence presented. But I think that it's an important thing insofar as we are all able to avoid the trials. Because there's no one that wins.
Would you agree, or what is your point of view about, it would seem to me that a guardian might be a better choice in an alienation case, because they can say this is what they've seen. Otherwise, they have to technically advocate what the child wants, and if the child's alienated, they're going to be programmed in many cases by the alienating parent, yeah?
I think you're exactly right, because the deal is a guardian ad litem is able, really, to be the eyes and ears of the court and to really say, call a spade a spade. And you don't have to hide behind procedural niceties, because the child, the guardian ad litem can be deposed and can testify. I think you're right.
Jill?
Yes.
We were talking before about what are some of the pitfalls and some of the problems, and I know that you've been concerned about this for a long time. Jackie, what do you think are some of the problems with the system of child reps?
Well, it's a work in progress, because some of the concerns to which you've already alluded, that it's personality driven, everybody brings their own theories, background, work ethic. So you're kind of, you do the best that you can.
What about disqualifying? What if somebody is clearly, what if you're in a situation and it's your opinion that you're really being treated unfairly? Have you ever seen where a judge will listen to that?
Well, it seems to me that the judges do what they can more often than not to protect the child rep. We're already protected in terms of being, of being liable, in terms of lawsuits, we're protected. I think that and you're better able to speak to this judge than I, but it seems to me if there are objective reasons, such as someone's not met with one of the parents, someone is, you know, either disrespectful to, or there has to be objective reasons for a judge to want to disqualify, because the emotions run so high that if people could get, if child reps could be disqualified for taking a side, if they think that that side is the right one, then there would be, I think, real havoc raised. You're dealing with a gray area, Jill and Judge, because you want to be able to protect the neutrality and the position of the child rep. But the other hand is you want to have, you know, a full and fair hearing on all the issues that are involved. I wish I could tell you there was an easy answer, but there really aren't.
Well, Jackie, if the kids are already brainwashed and well on their way to the severe level of parental alienation, how are they going to really be able to advocate for a kid who's already inducted by the alienating parent?
Well, Jill, you're asking me the question from the point of view of the alienated parent, too. Sometimes kids do what they need to do to survive, and that's what I said the first thing in the beginning of the hour, is that sometimes you have to wait because you can't ask a kid to, you can't expect a kid to turn completely on a parent upon whom he or she depends. Sometimes what happens is that time takes its toll, and that's what happens in cases where there's alienation in the absence of a divorce.
Yeah. Have you seen that?
Pardon me?
Have you seen that?
What, alienation in the absence of a divorce?
Well, sure,
yeah.
It can happen in intact marriages as well as in an adversarial divorce. I think it happened in my marriage. It happens in intact marriages. It happens with stepmothers. It happens, you know, with grandparents.
Sure.
It's across the board.
Oh, no, I actually have had some alienating boyfriends. I know it happens. I know. I had a long-term relationship, and he always wanted to take my son to the movies and don't listen to her. I know it happens, but I'm wondering.
Well, it does, but,
yeah.
but here's the deal is when you're dealing with someone who's fundamentally insecure and they think that their biggest tool and or weapon is to get rid of the competition. This happened with the cheerleader mother. You remember that? I mean, it's an immature reaction to feeling powerless. Fundamentally, I mean, I understand I'm cutting with like a, you know, kind of a, not cutting, I don't want to mix my metaphors, that painting with a broad brush, but to not be able to have effectively emotional censorship where you want to get rid of someone because you want the turf to yourself, we're seeing it again played out politically all over the place, is that anyone who could pose a threat has to be demonized. So I don't think that it's a matter of power. I think it's a matter of a really profound insecurity to feel that you have to censor someone out of a child's life because you need the turf to yourself.
Well, let's talk about less extreme cases for a minute.
Okay.
Let's go back to the typical combative adversarial divorce where somebody, you know, let's make it in the yellow zone, not necessarily the full-blown alienation. How do you get people to get to middle ground?
Well, what I do is that I make sure that I always meet each of the parents first before I meet the kids because I have to know with what the kid's feeling. And what I try to do is to get them to understand that their lives are, that they're not in the kind of primal danger that they're afraid they're in. And everything about the court system makes them believe that they're in terrible, terrible danger. They have lawyers that are questioning their ability to make decisions. They have their kids that they think are throwing their kids under the bus. They have this person, you know, that at one time they said they would live with them or, you know, or honor and love them forever, and now it's their worst enemy. This is the most and it's worse than illness, and it's worse than any disease. It's worse than dying because there's an element of volition in this that makes it particularly toxic. It's a horrible, horrible time. But to have even the idea that there's a way out of it with some kind of reasonable resolution, not a perfect one, but it seems to me that the results that I've gotten over the period of 20 years, and it's not always perfect. There's still people out there that hate my guts. Not many. Okay. But what I try to do is to have them understand that these kids are going to be their kids forever. Let me give you a perfect example. I had one kid when she was 8 years old. Okay, and the reason I was appointed on that case is because there was alienation in this case as well. But the trade-off, you know, the parenting time exchanges were so horrible that this kid was, you know, one time she tried to throw herself out of a moving car. One time she threw up all over some kids at a public ice skating rink. And, you know, I heard from the mother and I heard from the father. And when the kid came into my office, I said, Susie. And call her Susie. I said, Susie, what's with this teens? And she says, they work. Is that what she was trying to do was just to make herself the center of attention to diffuse the acrimony between her parents. Long and the short of it is, she's 18 now. And I just heard from her, and she's starting college. She's an exquisite little girl. And what happened was, by being able to have her understand that, just to have more tools to understand that these were still her parents. They were still her parents. I can't go into more detail than that. But suffice to say, she managed to have a tool set at 18 that would be the envy of everybody, you know, anybody that you could imagine. She's lovely, and she used it to make sure that she understood how not to feel as powerless as her mother did.
I want to be able to see if we can't paint a visual of your office for the people who are listening. Okay? Let's try.
Okay. Well, here's what I do with my office, is that what I did is that I leaned heavily on you know, Joseph Campbell and all the, you know, the importance of myth and the importance of setting a tone. So my office is an unusual blend of, you know, old-time formidable. It's a fancy office. It's got, you know, beautiful furniture, but there's a lot of whimsy in it. And I have a lot of ways to illustrate the idea of the forces.
You have a lot of dolls. A lot of dolls. You have a lot of figurines.
Well, they're not dolls. What I have are the Disney porcelains. And they're gorgeous. And then I have in a glass-covered bookcase, I have the top two shelves are the Better Angels of Our Nature. That's the ones with drawn in circles where everything is wonderful and can't we all get along, and it's the general kumbaya department. And then I say that, you know, on these top two shelves, everything is terrific. And if you make a deal only with the people, with those, you know, those parts of you that are on the top two shelves, that'll last until the people from the bottom two shelves, you know, show up.
Well,
and that's the list.
I think you have to almost see it. And I don't want to.
Yeah.
I just was wondering where that might go. But it's too beautiful not to see. Let's talk about parent coordinators.
Okay.
You know, you and I have talked over the months and years about, and you have some very definite opinions about the problems with the value of parent coordinators. Could you share that?
I think that their job description has to be very carefully circumscribed, because what happens is the way that the local rules, at least in the court of Cook County, is set up, they have the power of Zeus. And so I think one of the other problems that tend to make parents scared is that they're infantilized. And they're infantilized by the system, by their lawyers, by the situation, by the terror that they're in. And then you switch it to someone who has really very little accountability, and they become like, you know, the minister of childhood. It's very, very scary to completely hand over all your power as a parent to someone else. If, on the other hand, you have a parenting coordinator and they are limited to logistics if they're limited to figuring out how, you know, where do you pick up and what time do you pick up and that kind of stuff, then it's very helpful. But if you're handing over the right to make final decisions on important parent intensive decisions to a disinterested third party, I think that it's horrible. And I think that you're making it a continuing exercise in handing over the authority of being a parent to a third party. Only this time it's not a judge who's accountable. This time it's just someone who decided they want to be in the control business. So that's what I think. I think it's well intended, but you know with what the road to hell is paved. I think that it's a disaster to take away the right of a parent to make decisions for their children.
Jill, what are you seeing with all of your people, with the parent coordinators?
Well, I think they're extremely disillusioned, as I tried to relate before. Because they've been in the system so long, by the time a parent coordinator, or custody evaluator, or GAL comes in, it's already too late for these people. And all the questions in the chat room sort of relate to that. And the one that I'd like to pose to you now, Jackie, is if an evaluator refuses to gather all collateral information about the history of the relationships of a parent and a child and bases the report without this necessary information with a goodbye session recommendation, what do you do then?
I bring it to the attention of the judge that the preliminary work wasn't done. And so that the reason that the court should view this with as little weight as possible is because the action in the ocean isn't the waves. And what they did is, you know, you can say that the evaluator only did what was obvious and missed the boat entirely, and that if they had done the proper due diligence and they had done the proper research, they would have, you know, there's no way that they could have come up with it. It goes to weight. But, Judge, I think you should talk about that. If someone doesn't do, you know, the background work, doesn't talk to the people they're supposed to speak to, what kind of weight would you give a report like that?
None. I mean, that's. I think there's got to be more to the question than that, because that's obvious.
Let me just give you a background, because I know this particular person who's writing this, and she's telling me now this was a second report by the same evaluator, and she now is in Colorado. The children are in Pennsylvania. She moved there because her children were taken from her, and she has not seen them in years. And so she broke herself financially. She went through the system. She did exactly what she thought she was supposed to do and relied on this evaluator to do what he was supposed to do. And two reports later, she doesn't have her kids and hasn't seen them. So, I'm at the far end of the spectrum with people who are severely alienated and not seeing their children because of what a custody evaluator did not do or was supposed to do. And it's heartbreaking that these people, and I'm not putting it on you, Jackie, but I'm saying there's a huge mass of people out there writing these evaluations that are relying on what an alienating parent is telling them and not getting the right story. And because they're listening to children who have been essentially brainwashed, it's a horrific end to something that could have been very commonsensical and very, you know, very easy to solve.
Hang on a second. I think that there's an issue here, Jill, and I'm not in, believe me, please let me be real clear to everybody. I'm not in any way minimizing the Katrina-like devastation that can come to individual families as a result of being in the court system and to be dealing with parents but alienators, and there's other forms of real hideous abuse that break your heart. I'm not in any way demeaning, diminishing, or saying that doesn't happen, okay? But for you to think that a custody evaluator, even the best one in the world who got everything, would have made it easier, I think is maybe not really the case. Maybe it's exacerbated by it. Maybe it made it worse. But the idea that but for the actions of any one person, one judge, one lawyer, one evaluator, that everything would have been easy.
Oh, no, and I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying I'm just saying that these people have a specific goal, and that is to represent the child and to put forth the right information about what that relationship was and how it maybe doesn't exist now or is on the rocks and working towards the level of severe and parental alienation. So I'm just saying that the information that is transferred between the alienator and that custody evaluator may not always be correct. And I think that they have to look beyond and look into the new protocols that are being used right now with these kids that have had their minds twisted by the parent that they're now relying on. So I think if the right story comes out, and they see that there was a very strong relationship with this mom or this dad, and look, really delve into what the truth was instead of relying on revisionist history, then I think it's a whole different ball game. I think it's an element to working towards.
I'm not arguing with you that it's an element, Joel. I'm not arguing with you that it's an element, but I want to just make sure that the problem that the kid often has is when you have two people who are in this position of alienator and alienating and alienated, what happens is the kid is stuck in the middle. And you're calling it being brainwashed. Maybe it's being brainwashed. Maybe it's like Patty Hearst. Maybe you're dealing with,
Stockholm syndrome comes after the last level of parental alienation. After the severe level, they move on to Stockholm syndrome.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that these are also can be considered as adaptive responses for a kid who feels that he or she has no other choice.
Well, absolutely.
So
it's a coping mechanism where the authentic child is removed and they're relying on the psychological being of this alienating parent, and they lash out at the target parent. I mean, it's very clear what's happening.
But what I'm saying is that it doesn't necessarily have to last forever. And what happens when the kids grow and kids can't, and all of a sudden that kind of vindictive strategy, it doesn't work when a kid is older. That's what I'm saying. And I'm not telling you that it's the perfect solution. And I'm not telling you that it would work all the time. But when a kid gets out from the clutches of someone who wanted to pretty much exterminate the other parent, then all of a sudden the strategy, it loses it because if the alienating parent can do it to you, he can do it to the kid. And the kid is not stupid. The kid doesn't want to be the next victim.
Well, we've got a lot of calls, Jackie, and I want to grab some of these really quick because we've got about 9 minutes left. So I'm going to pick up this one, 708 area code. Do you have a question for Jackie?
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I would like to know how a child rep is appointed to a case.
It's the judge's complete discretion.
Okay. What is it based on?
I'll tell you, the judge has to believe that the kid needs his or her own lawyer, that the interests of the parents are that the kid is falling through the cracks. Judge, please jump in if I'm being in any way.
No, I will. I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay.
Here's my concern. And I'm just going to throw my own scenario out because it's very similar to many, many others. But if I was a stay-at-home mom for 7 years and I raised my children by myself and I walk out of an abusive marriage that was documented abuse in the court and we wind up in front of a family court judge, now, why is a child rep appointed to a case when there was a stay-at-home, fully functioning parent taking care of the children and there was already evidence of domestic violence? Shouldn't the case already be decided based on the facts of the case?
Judge, I'm going to give that one to you.
You are?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. So,
under what circumstance in that fact pattern would you think
if there's any
necessary?
Heat on the child, if there's any heat, any distressful situation where the judge has to make some decisions about not just custody, but who should be with the child, how much time, is it a distressing environment, is there any psychological impact. The minute the flame goes up, child rep's appointed.
Okay, so then what role does the child rep play? Because from my experience, I had two child reps involved in my case, and what they did in my case was protract the litigation and create the conflict. It was the child rep who created the ongoing conflict of our marriage and created the protracted case, which was unnecessary. It was clear-cut case. You go in based on the fact, mom was a stay-at-home mom for 7 years, she's educated, dad is domestic violence, has never been involved with the children.
Okay, so ask me another question. Ask me another question. Because the question is, if there's heat on the child, a child rep's appointed. Now, whatever happened
with that, we don't know.
What
say at that point, because from my experience, and I'm not just talking about my case, I'm actually talking about numerous other cases that I've been personally involved in, that from my experience, the child rep serves no purpose, does not act in the best interest of children. But yet, from my experience, I have seen that child reps majorly profit off of these conflicting cases, because from my experience, the child rep is the person that protracts the case so that everybody gets a piece of the pie. So
okay, but also,
that?
Also, one thing I want to say. It happened to you. I don't doubt it. It happened to others. They have also saved lives in the most incredible way you can imagine.
How did it save lives? Because, from my experience also, from what I've seen, not only from my own case, but numerous other cases, these children that are under the best interest of the children through a child rep wind up being sexually abused, and that's ignored through the courts. They wind up doing drugs or alcohol. They have severe emotional problems. And wind up, my son's been on the IEP for 6 years because of our divorce case, which was unnecessary. And yet none of that came into play. My ex-husband had taken my kids out of the state, never contacted me, and then left them at an amusement park alone.
I'm going to let Michelle and Jackie answer that question.
I don't want Ms. Birnbaum off the hook here because she's a child rep. So I'd like to hear from Ms. Birnbaum.
Well, I'm not sure that we should hang her up as an effigy of the child rep.
No, she's representing the child representative as a whole.
Hang on. Wait a second. I'm going to let them both answer. I'm going to hang up so that they can answer. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Bye, Jill.
Go ahead.
Just a second, okay, because I'm not going to let you do to me what you're saying that the child reps are doing to the kids. Is that what happens is in the cases that I have, in the cases that the other child reps, you know, that I'm not saying that everybody's perfect by any means, and I'm not saying that every fact-specific case, I'm not trying, but I don't feel that I have to apologize either for trying to do the best. Oftentimes what we're like is that we come in, we don't create the problems. The problems are handed to us. A judge tells us that we're appointed to represent children because the parents are in a very, you know, difficult situation. I'm not taking any responsibility myself for you to say that the child reps in this particular case are responsible for all the drug use and sexual abuse and everything else, I think is extremely, that's really grotesquely unfair.
All right, let's take one more call. We have another call from the 630 area code. Welcome, 630.
Hi, my name is David.
Hi, David. You have a quick question for Jackie?
Sure, Jackie.
Hi, David.
I heard you try to exonerate yourself before and even in a meeting with the legislature. My question to you is, are you willing to talk to the U.S. attorney about this problem, about the cottage industry and the family court and the probate court?
Okay, I'm going to hang up, Dave. Jackie can answer, okay?
Yep.
Go ahead, Jackie.
Well, here's the deal. I don't feel like I'm being a criminal. I feel like I'm doing the right thing, the best I can do it. If I'm active in the bar associations, I'd want to come talk to you, and I would talk to whoever else is necessary. You don't have to always agree with me, but I'm certainly willing to listen to what it is that you have to say or whatever anybody else has to say. I'm trying to do the best I can based on the information that's out there.
Terrific. Jackie, you have said so many wonderful and insightful things tonight, and I think that a lot of our parents that are listening and a lot of our listening audience are just so tired of what's happened to them and not seeing their children. And so I'm certainly not apologizing for the questions that they've asked tonight, but I want you to know that there are a lot of hurting people out there, and everything that you're doing is terrific to work to make these children have a wonderful life as they grow up. Just keep it in your pocket that there are alienating parents. You know that.
Jill, let me say one thing. I understand, and believe me, I understand, which is why I'm putting myself in the middle of this to see what I can do to help.
Perfect.
And so all the people that are out there.
And she practically never sends out her bills either. I mean, for anybody that wants to say Jackie's a culprit, she does this right from her heart for real.
Well, I do. I do. I'm not looking for those kinds of accolades. What I'm saying is that pain teaches. And please don't, when you're in the midst, all you people out there, when you're in the midst of the kind of volcanic pain that you're in, understand that pain does teach, and that your kids are your kids forever. And that just because things stink right now, it doesn't mean they have to stink forever. People go through horrible times. Countries go through horrible times. We're coming up on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And somehow life goes on. So try to learn from the pain. If you, to whatever extent you can manage it, fine. To whatever extent you can correct it, fine. But when things get to be too big, you still can't give up. They're going to be your kids forever. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you very much, Jackie, for being with us tonight.
We really appreciate your time.
Jackie, what's the name of your law firm?
Birnbaum, Haddon, Gelfand, and Arno, LLC.
And what's the phone number, Jackie? How can they reach you?
312-863-2800.
All righty, great. Everybody that needs a terrific lawyer, give Jackie a call, and we appreciate your time so much. Everybody tune in. We have a great guest next show. Catherine McWillie is coming up. Michelle, take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
Better.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, guys, and thank
have
you
a good
very
week.
Much.
I'll see you all soon.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.